Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back to Reclaiming the Republic. As we've been going through the Virginia and Kentucky resolutions, as well as Madison's clarity in his report, as well as his notes on nullification, his reports on the resolutions, as well as his notes on nullification. And you are clearly seeing the foundation that they did, or what they did, and the clarity they give us clearly points to what I backwards fell into, what I call Republic Review, or what we refer to now as Republic Review. Clearly, there is no better description. And when we actually talk with, when we air the conversation I just had with Douglas Gibbs, you're going to hear Douglas Gibbs and me, and how we kind of came across this. Or I say we because he was sitting right there, and he's the one that asked me, what are you going to call this? Because before that, I actually wasn't even going to put a name or a label to it. I mean, it was just this thing that had to be done. And so it begged the question, well, what do you call it? And if you understand judicial review and how people, that those two words, judicial review, mean something, it's not in the Constitution. And so here's the funny thing. I get some John Birch leaders, hey, Republic Review, that's not in the Constitution, or I should say naysayers. And it's not just the John Birchers, those few people that are naysayers, the progressives are the same way. The last thing they want to see happen is a remedy actually in fixing federal overreach. They love the federal overreach, and they love how it's destroying the Constitution and moving us into communism. And so these naysayers, that's not in the Constitution. The Convention of States are the same. They are the equal naysayers, the leaders of the Convention of States. This is why I tell you, I'm kind of in no man's land, or we're in no man's land when it comes to those who have vested interest in the direction that this country is going. And those who have vested interest are maintaining their relevance by maintaining what the Constitution isn't, and that the government can just keep on going down this path, or this the few things that we can do are these things, and they're all wrong. Anyway, anywho, back to this whole thing of the naysayers. Well, the words Republic Review aren't in the Constitution. Show me in the Constitution where judicial review is written. Show me anywhere in the term, and or I should say, show me anywhere in the ratification debates where judicial review is actually written. It's not. Well, so how did we come up with this term? Well, Jefferson uttered that word as a commonality that what the court is doing is this self-asserted, self-proclaimed, self-aggrandized judicial review. The federal court has the ability to choose what cases it that are actively coming to it. It doesn't have the ability to go down and pull into their purview something that was not a federal court issue. And Marbury v. Madison was not a federal court issue. And this is why in the process, Marbury v. Madison broke the barrier. I should say John Marshall broke the barrier unconstitutionally by reaching down into a state court and saying, we want to review this case. Because Constitution does not give the court system an active ability to go down and go beyond their jurisdiction, go beyond those boundaries. They actually have to be pursued. And so there may have been an appeal, but that appeal does not necessarily guarantee an appeal to the federal court, nor should it go into the federal court if it doesn't have jurisdiction. The federal court should not ever review anything it has no jurisdiction on. This is why I continually tell you that every time you step into a federal court over an issue that they have no jurisdiction on, you are surrendering your sovereignty to an entity that has an insatiable desire to aggrandize its power in every fashion and form, period. Okay, so this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are also listening to the only show that goes through the academic evidence and the evidence-based solutions of what we have to do. Now, I hope that you've been ruminating, cogitating, whatever, giving deep thought to this concept of joining this cause, this movement of holding the federal government accountable to the Constitution. And not just the federal government, all government at all levels must be accountable to the Constitution. And so hopefully you are going to be and desire to be equal with me in becoming public enemy, or actually let's call it tyranny's number one enemy, because bottom line, tyranny does not like it when people finally stand up against them. So who else is in there? Who else is in here with me, I should say? Now, we talked and mentioned in the last episode, and I'm going to start mentioning this every episode now, Red Pill Expo is going to be in Lafayette, Louisiana. I don't know the venue yet, but as the information comes, I will provide it to you. Now, what we want to do is we want to make sure every state legislator understands that they have a free admission to Red Pill Expo. They have to pay for the VIP access. They'll have to pay for, you know, whatever, but they don't have to pay to just be there and to attend the expo, to be able to listen to the speakers. And actually, the reason we're doing this is so that they can come and they can participate in this concept of working together in going, you know, after the federal government, or I should say, getting together, getting organized, and then going after, because this is what Republic Review has to be done. This is how it has to be done. A single state, when Wyoming actually makes the declaration, they need to be working with other states to bring them on board, bring them up to speed, and get them attuned to what needs to be done so that at 13 states, we, okay, now we've got this, and now we can start moving forward with more vigor and energy. And then once we have 27 states, we have all the power necessary to unleash upon the communist revolution and actually shut it down and shut down the globalists once and for all. So that being said, please let your state legislators know that they need to plan on attending, and it's going to be, I think it's the first weekend of November, so it's just a few months away. So get it on your schedule, get it on their schedule, so that you and everybody else can be planning on attending. Because this is how we start, because when you start working together, when you start communicating and communicating on a regular basis and getting organized in a way that is going to actually help you effectively organize and take on the enemy, there you go. And when I say the enemy, I'm not talking about the Constitution. The Constitution is not our enemy. It's those people who are subverting it. It's those people who are applying tyranny, who believe that just because they've created this concept of a democracy, they are now, they have a mandate of power, that the people have given them the power to do whatever they want to do. And I'm sorry, no, you don't have that power. And that's why the state's power trumps any politician, and it trumps any government in the world. The power of the collective states in this republic, that's how much power it possesses. Anyway, as you know, we have a comment line, 425-270-5416, and that's where you'll want to go, and that's where you'll need to call if you've got a question, you've got a comment, you want to get injected in, or possibly even lead to having a dialogue with me. So 425-270-5416. Harry, I hope you're listening. And what we want to do is, I don't want to go into a longer monologue or dialogue than I've already done. What I want to do is just kind of, because we're almost halfway through the notes on nullification. And as you can see, even though I read it and it is kind of repeating the same stuff, the way he's repeating it and the directions he's coming at helps you, I think, understand this in a much better context. So paragraph 41, thus, during the temporary nullification of the law, the results would be the same, that those proceeding from an unqualified nullification and the result of a convention might be that 7 out of 24 states might make the temporary results permanent. It follows that any state was, or any state which could obtain the concurrence of six others, might abrogate the law of the U.S., whatever, constructively, and give the Constitution any shape they please, in opposition to the construction and will of the 17th. Each of the 17 have an equal right and authority with each of the seven. Every feature in the Constitution might thus be successively changed, and after a scene of exemplified confusion and distraction, what had unanimously agreed as a whole would not as a whole be agreed by a single party. The amount of this modified right of nullification is that a single state may arrest the operation of a law of the United States and institute a process which is to terminate in the ascendancy of a minority over a large majority in a republican system, the characteristic rule of which is that the majority will is the prevailing rule. And when they say majority, not 50%, but in construct of the Constitution, it's three-fourths. And this newfangled theory, and this, he actually wrote that, and this newfangled theory is attempted to be fathered on by Mr. Jefferson, the apostle of republicanism, and whose own words declare that acquiescence in the decision of the majority is the vital principle of it. See his inaugural address, and that I think that was his very first address in, 1801, after the election. So anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, then the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so here we go, and here is the introduction of Mr. Jefferson in paragraph 41. And so I'm going to kind of repeat it, because for paragraph 43 also cites Jefferson and his concepts. And so he brings in Jefferson a few times. This is because many people have created this marriage of nullification to Jefferson, basically have tied this and bonded this to Jefferson and Jefferson's name. And this new, again, this is quoting out of 41, the very last sentence, and this newfangled theory is attempted to be fathered on Mr. Jefferson, the apostle of republicanism, and whose own words declare that quote, acquiescence in the decision of the majority is the vital principle of it, close quote, in his inaugural address. And again, his inaugural address of 1801. Well, might Virginia declare, as her legislature did by a resolution of 183, that her resolutions of 98 and 99 gave no support to the nullifying doctrine of South Carolina, and well may the friends of Mr. Jefferson disclaim any sanction to it or to any constitutional right of nullification from his opinions, his memory is fortunately rescued from the imputations by the very document procured from his files and so triumphantly appealed to by the nullifying partisans of every description in this document. The remedial right of nullification is expressly called a natural right and consequently not a right derived from the Constitution, but from abuses or usurpations releasing the parties to it from their obligation. In other words, if you understand what they're talking about, there is in this concept of a state saying that we don't want to be a part of this union anymore. We, because the Constitution is not being followed or it's being violated or what have you, or the Constitution, there are problems with the Constitution, because clearly there were problems with the Constitution regarding the slaves, returning the slaves. So anyway, he goes on in 43, no example of the inconsistency of party zeal can be greater than is seen in the value allowed to Mr. Jefferson's authority by the nullifying party. Whilst they disregard his repeated assertions of the federal authority, even under the Articles of Confederation, to stop the commerce of a refractory state, whilst they abhor his opinions and propositions on the subject of slavery and overlook his declaration that in a republic, it is a vital principle that the minority must yield to the majority, they seize on an expression of Mr. Jefferson that nullification is the rightful remedy as the shibboleth of the party and almost sanctification of their cause. But in addition to your inconsistency, their zeal, and I don't know why it's your, because it probably should be there, their inconsistency, their zeal is guilty of the subterfuge of dropping a part of the language of Mr. Jefferson, which shows his meaning to be entirely at variance with the nullification construction. His words in the document appealed to be as the infallible test of his opinions are, quote, thus the right of nullification meant by Mr. Jefferson is the natural right which all admit to be remedy against an insupportable oppression. It cannot be supposed for a moment that Mr. Jefferson would not revolt at the doctrine of South Carolina that a single state could constitutionally resist a law of the Union whilst remaining within it, and that with the accession of a small minority of the others overruled the will of the great majority of the whole and constitutionally annulled the law everywhere. So, in other words, you really do have to when the... And so here's the thing. The states are seeing and getting these things applied, and even though they're being applied, and even though they're being dumbfounded, and even though they're being overran by the federal government of all this tyranny, the states, all they have to do is you don't nullify, you don't kick them out, you don't stop these things. You can, at every state, you can start trying to fight and doing that. But you have to start getting organized at the state level in communicating with each other. You know what? We've got to stop this. It's about time we pull up our britches and turn to DC and force them to shut this down. What that means, force them to shut this down, is we need to get 27 states to go along with this. If not, our only other option is secession. We must secede from the Union. And at that point in time, then we would, because this is where I've gone on this concept of seceding states from China and Russia. What would happen if Hong Kong said that they don't want to be a part of the China experiment and the communist government anymore? They want to become a state in the United States under this U.S. Constitution. Well, in so doing, then it creates it creates the beginning of a divorcement, a secession from China, and it creates an attachment to the United States as a territory. And then in that process, it starts moving in that direction of becoming a state. The people of Hong Kong do not become a U.S. citizen. Even the people of that territory do not become a U.S. citizen. They become a territory that has a direct relationship and an ally. But the only way anybody from that territory can become a U.S. citizen is through the application process and, you know, to become a citizen. So they have to speak, you know, and live the laws, and they have to be living within the United States. Now, one of the advantages of becoming a territory allows these people to actually, you know, intermingle with the United States, because now they're U.S. territory, like Guam and what have you. But they would not be U.S. citizens. They would be citizens of the territory of Hong Kong, of Crimea, and so forth. So when you start looking at how we actually have everything we need to rock the world, and everybody that loves liberty and wants full accountability of government and does not want government to be able to mandate anything other than those things such as declaring of war and those few things that the Constitution is actually enumerated, then we are moving in the right direction, if that makes sense. And I think that's as clear as can be. Now, moving on in paragraph 45, if the right of nullification meant by him had not been thus guarded against, a perversion of it, let him be his own interpreter in his letter to Mr. Giles in December 1826, in which he makes the rightful remedy of a state in an extreme case to be a separation from the Union, not a resistance to its authority while remaining in it. So just so you understand, I'm going to highlight this. And so in which he makes the rightful remedy of a state in an extreme case to be separation from the Union, not a resistance to it while remaining in it. So see, as going through this, some of these things I'm highlighting, and I just highlighted that because Mr. Lincoln was wrong. You have states have a right to secede. They cannot be compelled. They cannot be forced in a land of liberty, a government founded on liberty, to force a state to live under any type of oppressive rule. And so it is endowed by our Creator, these inalienable rights, and those rights can't be taken. And as a matter of fact, that's why Mr. Jefferson made this statement. And going on in 45, the authority of Mr. Jefferson therefore belongs not to, but it's directly opposed to, the nullifying party who have so unwarrantedly availed themselves of it. Bing. So as we look at the nullifiers of today, we can clearly see how they have perverted and subverted really what nullification is all about. Because nullification is actually taking a stand as a single state by stepping out. If you're going down the direction that you want to call this interposition, or I should say these unconstitutional things, is wrong and still be a part of the Union, then what you have to do is you have to start working double time. The states not only have to do their business, or they have to basically put themselves in self-sustain, you know, just do the minimum government necessary to put all of their energy in working with internally and working within the other states necessary to interpose, not just say, we're not going to follow this, you can't do this, and so forth. Now, there are efforts and challenges, and you, as you understand, with the court and with government, they can put a stay order or a temporary hold on, you know, this moratorium, like in South Dakota, they're shutting down logging. That can be, you know, that can be put on stay so that the logging can continue and the work can continue and people can continue while they start doing discovery on whether this is legitimate and legal and moving down that path on their own. Then they also need to be moving down that path with the other states to say, we all need to be looking at not just this, but every facet of tyranny we are living under. Okay, so with that, we're heading into the next break, and we'll be right back after these two promos with paragraph 46. So we're now on page 7 of 13. And my intent is to try to get through almost all of this today and in our next episode. So hang in there, folks. We're getting through this, and I hope you agree with me. These things are so revealing. We'll be right back after these two promos.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review, so please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so moving forward, because I don't know if everybody understands the peril in what's going on in the world with the communist movement, with China taking its dominant position. And actually, I'm just letting you know, they're taking their dominant position a little early. In other words, they've had more success than they were expecting by this point in time. They didn't realize that so many nations would cave and fall as quickly as they have. But I'm telling you, there is one person that knew, and that is our Creator. Anyway, 46, it is said that in several instances, the authority and laws of the United States have been successfully nullified by particular states. This may have occurred possibly in urgent cases and in confidence that it would not be at variance with the construction of the federal government, or in cases where operating within the nullifying state alone, it might be connived as a lesser evil than the resort to force, or in cases of falling within the federal jurisdiction, or finally, in cases deemed by the state subversive to their essential rights and justified, therefore, by the natural right of lost self-preservation. But all this is, at it may, exemplifies of nullification, though passing off with it or within any immediate disturbance of the public order are to be deplored as weakening the compact on government and as undermining the union. One thing seems to be certain, that the states which have exposed themselves to the charge of nullification have, with the exception of South Carolina, disclaimed it as a constitutional right. There you go. And have moreover protested against it as modified by the process of South Carolina. Isn't that interesting? And so as we go into paragraph 47, he goes on, the conduct of PENA, and I don't know who P-E-N-A is, or Pennsylvania, and the opinions of Judges McKean and Tilghman have been particularly dwelt on by the nullifiers, but the final acquiescence of the state in the authority of the federal judiciary transfers the authority to the other scale. And it is believed that the opinions of the two judges have been superseded by those of their brethren, which have since been, at the present time, are opposed to them. Now, what I want to point out here, I need to go back to something that Madison said in 1817, that regardless of how the federal government obtains the power, the roles and responsibility to doing and exerting things that are not within their jurisdiction, things that are unconstitutional, not enumerated in the Constitution, regardless of how, it will always be violations that at any point in time the states could quickly or slowly wake up, work together, and then grab that rug and pull the rug out from underneath the federal government, throwing it onto its back, or, in other words, taking a deep breath and blowing hard and blowing down their house of cards. The states have that kind of power. Okay? 48. This is paragraph 48. Attempts have been made to show that the resolutions of Virginia contemplated a forcible resistance to the alien and sedition laws, and as evidence of it, the laws relating to the armory and the habeas corpus for the protection of members of her legislature have been brought into view. It happens, however, as has been ascertained by the recorded dates, that the first of these laws was enacted prior to the alien and sedition laws. As to the last, it appears that it was a general law providing for other emergencies as well as federal arrests, and its applicability never tested by any concurrence under the alien and sedition laws. The law did not necessarily preclude an acquiescence in supervising decision of the federal judiciary should that not sustain the habeas corpus, which might be calculated would be sustained, and all must agree that cases might arise of such violations the security and privileges of the representatives of the people and would justify the state in a resort to the natural law to self-preservation. Now, I'm going to just inject one quick thing here. If you are not taught natural law, if you're not taught that you have these inalienable rights, then all of a sudden you've marginalized them. You don't realize you've got them. You've debased your own rights and your own power as a sovereign and authority, and therefore you quickly capitulate. And so if you want to understand how, it's the debasement of society, it's the turning upside down enlightenment for debasement, why we're in this mess, which is why I made those comments in the previous episode. The extent of the privileges of the federal and state representatives of the people against criminal charges by the two authorities reciprocally involves delicate questions which it may be a matter to leave for those who decide them, unnecessarily to discuss them in advance. The moderate views of Virginia on that critical occasion of the alien and sedition laws are illustrated by the terms of the 7th resolution, with an eye to which the 3rd resolution ought to be expounded by the unanimous erasure of the terms, quote, null, void, etc., from the 7th article as it is stood, and by the condemnation and imprisonment of Calendar under the law without the slightest opposition on the part of the state. So far was the state from countenancing the nullifying doctrine that the occasion was viewed as a proper one for exemplifying its devotion to public order and acquiescence in laws which it deemed unconstitutional, whilst those laws were not constitutionally repealed. The language of the governor in a letter to a friend will best attest the principles and feelings which dictated the course pursued on the occasion. See James Monroe to James Madison. This was a letter that James Monroe had sent to him. It's sometimes asked in what mode the states could interpose in their collective character as parties to the Constitution against usurped power. It was not necessary for the object and reasoning of the resolutions and report that the mode should be pointed out. It was sufficient to show that the authority to interpose existed, and it was a resort beyond that of the Supreme Court or the U.S. government or any authority derived from this Constitution. The authority being plenary, so just you understand the authority from this Constitution, meaning the U.N., or any other treaty or agreement that has been made under the Constitution still is subjugated to the states of this Constitution. That's the power. We actually have the power over the UN. And we can terminate the UN. If you don't believe me, kick the UN out, stop funding them, and guess what happens? They will go away because there's not enough money. Well, maybe China would become the despot king of this global government. Maybe Russia might be able to help, and maybe Britain, who has a good amount of money. But I'm just telling you that if we stopped funding the world would probably come and say, hey, you know what? You're going to have to give us more. You're going to have to, because I've been telling you this for years and years. We've been subsidizing communism's growth throughout the world. All along, there's been an organization since the 50s that is supposedly out to stop communism's growth in the United States, when we've been subsidizing not only here, but in the world. So just so you understand, keeping a proper perspective, all organizations aren't what they tell you they are. They may say this is what we're doing and this may look good and they're stopping this or that. They have not stopped and arrested and turned us around. The only way to do this is to get our states to do it. Private organizations, even GR, does not have the authority. We have no monarchy. We have no aristocracy. We have a constitutional republic with a republican form of government of representations of the sovereigns of the people and the sub-elements of government in America. This is why we have bicameral legislative bodies in every state, or should have bicameral legislative bodies in every state in accordance with the Constitution and the design of our Constitution. Anyway, let me just go back and move on to what I'm saying out of paragraph 49. Sorry for that little rant. The authority being plenary, the mode was of its own choice, and it is obvious that if employed by the states as co-parties to the and creators of the Constitution, it might either so explain the Constitution or so amend it as to provide a more satisfactory mode within the Constitution itself for guarding it against constructive or other violations. It remains, however, for the nullifying expositors to specify the right and mode of interposition which the resolution meant to assign to the states individually. They cannot say it was a natural right to resist intolerable oppression, for that was a right not less admitted by all of the collective right of the states as parties to the Constitution, the non-denial of which was urged as proof that it could not be meant by the resolution. They then cannot say that the right meant by the constitutional right to resist the constitutional authority, for that is a contradiction in terms as much as a legal right to resist a law. And so we have a legal right to actually, you know, clarify and live within the parameters of the law. We do not have to live under the color of law, but there is a process to do it. You just can't stand up, because what happens if you tell the policeman who's going to arrest you under the color of law, you can't do this? He's going to arrest you. We'll be right back after these two promos.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me repeat what kind of just went right at the end there. This is paragraph 51. They cannot say that the right meant was a constitutional right to resist the constitutional authority. For that is a contradiction in terms as much as a legal right to resist a law. Now, I'm going to kind of give you some context here, because obviously if everybody was abiding by the terms and definitions of the compact, we would have no laws that would be dictating, you know, our healthcare, energy, commerce, and those types of things. What we would have is we would have, you know, a very limited government, and that the states would be working together and, you know, constraining that government and being able to thrive as states, as a republic. Now, when it makes this comment, a legal right to resist a law, and as I said, you know, they've created this facade, this house of cards, telling you that these are all the laws that they have, when we know that they don't. Those of us who understand the limitations and jurisdiction of the federal government, especially in law itself, they just can't create law. So they've been doing it, and they've been doing it unconstitutionally. But you can't come along and say, hey, that's unconstitutional. What you have to do is you have to go to the parties and prove to the parties that that's all unconstitutional. And then at that point, the parties can choose to interpose, or they can allow the anarchy to continue. They can do the right thing and clean things up, or they can allow us to fall into the Bolshevik Revolution and watch our Constitution burn into ashes, because that's what's happening. Anyway, paragraph 52. They can find no middle ground between a natural and a constitutional right, on which a right of nullifying interposition can be placed, And it is curious to observe the awkwardness of the attempt by the most ingenious advocates, Upshar and Barron, or Barron. They will not resist the claims as modified by South Carolina, for that has scarce an advocate of the state and owes the remnant of its popularity there to the disguise under which it is now kept alive, some of the leaders of the party admitting its indefensibility in its naked shape. The result is that the nullifiers, instead of proving the resolution meant nullification, prove that it was altogether without meaning. It appears from this comment that the right asserted and exercised by the legislature to declare an act of Congress unconstitutional had been denied by the defenders of the Alien and Sedition Acts as an interference with the judicial authority, and consequently that the reasonings employed by the legislature were called for by the doctrines and inferences drawn from that authority and were not an idle display of what no one denied by the legislature due to the occasion. It appears further that the efficacy or efficacious interposition, interposition contemplated by the legislature was concurring and cooperating interposition of the states, not that of a single state. Sorry, there's some of these words, or you know, the way he writes them, it's just cumbersome because I just don't talk. Most people today don't talk this way, but that's okay. This is why I'm reading it. I don't want you to understand what he's saying as what I read, so that you will actually take the time to read this for yourself so you understand these are not my words. This clarity doesn't come from GR. This is James Madison, the father of our Constitution, the one man that knew this Constitution better than anybody else. And I am telling you that he still didn't understand the designs by the Creator in what was going on. He had no idea that there was this even potential of global governance over a century later from this point in time. That the League of Nations would be an attempt, and then that the United Nations would be a new attempt, and that there would be this concept of trying to subjugate the United States to that. But he was talking, as I pointed out before, that the only way that any government or any treaty or any body that's created under this thing called the Constitution through a treaty with the UN, it still subjugates that body to the states. Because the states are the ultimate sovereigns. Therefore, the only way we could have truly a global governance is under this Constitution. Because everything else that's written by the UN and its charter cannot become superior to the US Constitution. It can't. It's still going to be subordinate to the Constitution, or equal to with the Constitution, and subordinate always to the parties. And so if you haven't heard what's going on in Utah, we'll get into that when we hit the marketing. And we're going to hit the ground running on marketing once we kind of get through this, and then we'll go into the Republic Review stuff and the curriculum and so forth, like I've been telling you. But let me get through this. It appears that the legislature expressly disclaimed the idea that a declaration of a state that a law of the U.S. was unconstitutional had the effect of annulling the law. It appears that the object to be attained by the invited cooperation with Virginia was as expressed in the 3rd and 7th resolution, to maintain within the several states their respective authorities, rights, and liberties, which could not be constitutionally different in different states, nor inconsistent with a sameness in the authority and laws of the United States in and all in each. It appears that the means contemplated by the legislature for attaining the object were measures recognized and designated by the Constitution itself. Paragraph 60. Lastly, it may be remarked that the concurring measures of the states, without any nullifying interposition, whatever did attain the contemplated object, a triumph over the obnoxious acts and an apparent abandonment of them forever. It has been said or insinuated that the proceeding of Virginia in 1798 and 99 had not the influence ascribed to them in bringing them that even that event triumphant result. I'm going to reread that again because if you want to help read, just let me know, because I'd love to actually have you do the recordings and read. If anybody is really good at reading some of this stuff, I'd rather have somebody else. As long as you're reading it word for word better than I can, I'll put you on, and then I'll just stop and editorialize, then play again, or what have you. Anyway, I'm going to do this again. It has been said or insinuated that the proceedings of Virginia in 98-99 had not the influence ascribed to them in bringing them that event triumphant result. Whether the influence was or was not such as been claimed for them is a question that does not affect the meaning and intention of the proceedings. But as a question of fact, the decision may be safely left to the recollection of those who were contemporary with the crisis, to the researchers of those who were not, taking for their guide the reception given the proceedings by the Republican Party. Okay, so I'm pointing out, here's another reference in this good old document that Madison is identifying not the Democratic Party or the Democratic Republican Party. He is calling it the Republican Party everywhere, and the pains taken by it in nullifying republications of them in newspapers and in other forms. Paragraph 62. What the effect might have been if Virginia had remained patient and silent, and still more if she had sided with South Carolina in favor of the Alien and Sedition Acts, can be a matter of conjecture. What would have been thought of her if she had recommended the nullifying project of South Carolina may be estimated by the reception given to it under fictitious gloss, and that the midst of the peculiar excitement of which advantage has been taken by the partisans of that anomalous conceit. 64. It has been sufficiently shown from the language of the report, as has been seen, that the right in the states to interpose declarations, and protest against unconstitutional acts of Congress had been denied, and that the reasoning of in the resolutions was called for by that denial into the triumphant tone with which it is affirmed, reiterated, that the resolutions must have been directed against what no one denied, unless they were meant to assert the rights of a single state to arrest the annulling acts of the federal legislature, makes it proper to adduce that a proof of the fact that the declaratory right was denied, which, if it does not silence the advocate of nullification, must render their candid ear indignant at the repetition of the untruth. Now, here's the thing. What Madison basically just said here is that, you know, even though they were calling for the states to join, that didn't happen. And even though they may have had some success in, you know, awakening people up, creating the party, and not necessarily enforcing the laws everywhere, they did not go down the path of strict nullification. Their intent was to unify the states with interposition, basically republic review. We're reclaiming the republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.